This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Clive Ball.
And we're going to talk in this hour about digital ID. It is the story of the day. It's going to be officially announced, unveiled a little bit later on by Keir Starmer, but it's already on just about all the front pages this morning. Mixed reaction. The Daily Mail are likening it to life in East Germany and saying, show us your papers. On the other hand, there are others saying it could help with things like work and proving that you have the rights to live here and so on. So I thought it would be a good idea to get somebody on who knows how this will all work, or hopefully does. And that's Fevzi Turkalp, who's the technology journalist, editor of Gadget Detective and host of the Gadget Detective podcast, who is here to explain a bit more about this, but also talk more generally about how our digital ID could work. And if you've got a question about our data, our privacy and digital devices, then do call and we'll try and answer. If you can't call in, then send a message and we'll try and get through those as well. So the usual numbers apply, 0345 6060 973, or you can WhatsApp on that number. You can text 84850 or talk into an Alexa and say send the comments to LBC. So morning, Fevzi.
Morning.
So, first of all, lots of dramatic headlines. Can you tell us a bit more about what this really means from the information we've got at the moment?
Sure. So this is going to be a digital ID system for all adults in this country. It's likely to be an app running on a smartphone, and we're told you have to have iOS or Android. So those people that have more esoteric operating systems or no smartphones are going to have an issue. And the purpose has been framed, initially at least, as for tackling illegal immigration and illegal working. And you're expected to be able to show it at the point where you're applying for a job or starting a job, and also when you want to enter into a lease for accommodation.
Right. Some of which you have to sort of prove your ID already, don't you? But this
You have to do at the moment, actually.
You have to do it anyway. but this is something that everybody would need, this bit of ID. Now, do we know what form it would take? Would it be automatically on a phone, for example?
Yeah, so it's the government hasn't said, and I, by the way, I don't think that they fully know, right? But we've been here before twice with John Major in the 1990s and Tony Blair in the 2000s. I mean, under Tony Blair, there were actually 15,000 ID cards actually issued. They had to be scrapped by the coalition government who came in and did it. I don't know if you realise, but
no,
we actually had these cards. So it's likely to be an app that needs to reside on a smartphone, which automatically raises questions about digital exclusion and so forth. And you will be required to show it under certain circumstances. That app will then be interrogated and checked against a central database. That database is likely to hold your status, so your ability to work, your nationality, anything else that they care to store, and then linked to your biometric data, so likely to hold facial recognition, possibly holding fingerprints, which is interesting because I personally have never been fingerprinted. I'm not very keen on being required to be fingerprinted. It's not clear. I suspect that they may introduce some of these things over time, assuming that this becomes a reality at all.
Do you think there's a chance that it won't then?
Well, there was no manifesto pledge for this. There's been no public consultation, and a technology like this, whether you think it's good or bad, and of course there are pros and cons to any such system, it fundamentally changes the relationship between citizens and the state. And some people may say that, well, that's a good thing, or it's a price worth paying. Others will disagree, but we haven't had that debate. And as I say, it wasn't in anyone's manifesto either. So I think that, you know, this government has a significant majority. It could well get it through. But, you know, whether it will become a reality, I don't know. It feels rather like a knee-jerk reaction to small boats and the criticism that the government is under. They want to be seen to be doing something, and this will be great for them. It will help them in so many ways. But I guess also it's hard for me to believe that this sort of system and all the costs and all the political difficulty in introducing this would be introduced just for checking when someone starts a job and when someone leases a house or rents a house. It's quite clear to me that there would be functional creep. You know, it could be expanded to accessing the NHS. People can say that's a good thing. Banking, licensing, being stopped by the police. And it's an interesting one because, you know, those who've watched YouTube videos of police stops in the USA will know that people are not required to show their ID if they're not suspected of an actual crime, whereas our laws in this country, under certain circumstances, allow people to be stopped even without suspicion. And so would they be bolstering our rights, or are we going to get into sort of 1940s papyrin, where you're required to show your, well, it won't be your paper, it'll be your digits, you'll have to show your digits. But it is, I think, it's a bit worrying. And I'm minded that when Tony Blair's scheme was finally scrapped, I think it was in 2010, it had been branded as intrusive, ineffective, and expensive, and bullying were the adjectives that we used.
The bit about compulsory is a bit confusing. I mean, as far as I know, they're not suggesting that you'll be stopped in the street and asked to show your papers, but compulsory could mean that. But on the other hand, it could mean it's compulsory if you want to get a job or if you want to rent a property. Now, there presumably are lots of people who don't want to do either of those things.
Exactly. I mean, you could go years without showing it if this was all they were going to use it for, and one has to believe that it isn't. I mean, if nothing else, that would be a huge waste of public funds, right? Because this will obviously cost billions to introduce. As I understand it, compulsory means you have to have it. And you will need it in order to be able to do certain things. But you see, because it's on a smartphone and smartphones have, you know, GPS location and Wi-Fi geolocation, it's, as I say, it changes the relationship with the state, because the state can interrogate this for any number of reasons and also can use it to track your whereabouts potentially, because at the moment you can track where a phone is, but you don't necessarily know whose phone that is. But now, the abuse of it could be quite critical. I looked up for, you know, whether there's any analogous systems anywhere in the world, and there is in Estonia. They have a system that's very much like this.
But I've heard about that, yes.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, in Estonia, they didn't introduce it all in one go, and it wasn't mandatory to start with, and people were sort of taken along with it, and it's a much smaller society as well. So trying to introduce this without a mandate all at once and make it mandatory at the same time, I think is a big ask. I do also worry about the government's track record in keeping our information secure, and particularly at a time when we see that, you know, we are subject to hybrid warfare, and increasingly our data systems will be hacked. I mean, our NHS was famously very badly hacked, and we were in very bad shape. But there have been instances of, I think, 19,000 Afghans had their data hacked and stolen. 10,000 police officers, abuse survivors have had their information hacked and publicised as well. And because these cards will hold biometric information, unlike passwords, you can't really change your biometric information. So once someone's stolen your fingerprints or your facial recognition or your iris, you are in quite big trouble, because that information could be used against you for the rest of your life.
And some of this information, of course, we've already given to the state and to numerous companies. I mean, the passport, for example, is a modern passport, is biometric. and it seems to join up with other government functions, because when I've had to do certain things with gov.uk or whatever it is, it seems to know that you put in your passport number and it will check that the picture is the same as the one on your driving licence. And so it does seem to be joined up in that way. So presumably this would be an extension of that.
Yeah, I mean, it will probably end up being a whole new system with sucking
really?
In the data. I suspect so, because it will have a much broader range of functions than that. So, I mean, this is the argument for it at the same time as being the argument against it. A lot of these things already exist in one form or another by virtue of passports and driver's licenses and other forms of ID. And therefore, we're already doing this. I mean, landlords are already required by law. I mean, a landlord can be jailed for not checking the illegibility.
But is what you produce reliable and trustworthy?
I think.
Because that, I mean, presumably the idea of this is that it's a fail-safe, that if you are claiming benefits or you are using a hospital or you're trying to get work, you produce this to show that you're a legitimate person with the right to live and work.
Look, I mean, opinions on this vary. My view is that a digital ID system is probably easier to circumvent than a physical one.
Really?
Yeah, and certainly cheaper, because it scales well once you've solved the problem of how you trick the app into providing information.
Oh, really? So you could have fake digital IDs quite easily, do you think?
Yeah, it would be like having, you know, World War II forges doing like 60 million passports all at once, you know. So I actually think that there is, first of all, this is a honeypot. It's a huge amount of really valuable information about us that not only thieves and terrorists, but other states would love to get their hands on the havoc that could be caused with it. It's centralized, it's huge, and the government's got a frankly appalling record of securing our data. I mean, taking those things into combination, you'd think that this would have to be thought out over a much longer period of time, and there's no evidence that any of this existed a year ago in the minds of our leaders, because it certainly wasn't in the manifesto.
Very good point. OK, Fevzi Turkalp is with us. We are talking about digital ID. We're calling digital ID cards, but I think that's not really an accurate description from the sounds of things. And we're going to take some questions as well. If you've got a query or a point, then feel free, 0345 6060 973. Ralph's in Peacehaven. Hello, Ralph.
Oh, hello, Clive.
Hi, Ralph.
Yes, thank you. My major concern about this, yes, I agree in the principle. I mean, many countries use these systems very successfully, and I haven't heard too many complaints about them. But my concern is, if this is only a digital card, then what happens if you lose your smartphone or, you know, for any reason you can't use your smartphone? That means you go for a hospital treatment, well, everything else. Yeah, they'll reject you because you can't get the code out. I think that's bad. It'd be much better if they actually said, well, yes, can we give you a security card as well? But I think they're using cost-cutting measures here to reduce something quite cheaply, which should be on a much, you know, more sort of generous scale.
Okay. But yeah, what happens if your phone doesn't work? Or is it possible, Fevzi, for there to be a non-phone version of this?
I think it's certainly possible, but there's no suggestion that they're going to do that at the moment. I mean, we'll have to see, because there is the issue of, you know, what they call digital exclusion. So there's a lot of people still that don't use smartphones. In fact, a lot of people have moved away from smartphone back to more basic phones for their sanity as much as anything. Phones can break down. Phones can have their batteries run out. And you know, the caller's quite right. You know, if you're going for a hospital appointment and you're being required to show it in real time, then, you know, someone's going to have to make a call about whether they're going to allow that or not. So
surely there has to be some system for those who are not tech savvy. If you're really every adult is meant to be having this, there are people who can't. They're saying it's free, but that's the app being free. They're not going to give you a free smartphone, are they?
Well, exactly. They really ought. You know, it's like employers that expect you to be accessible out of hours or on the move need to provide their employees with phones. Let's see them all buy us an iPhone 17 Pro Max, please.
So, Jeffrey, for example, here, quite a lot of people saying this, but I made a decision not to have a smartphone since they're addictive. The government may wish to make digital ID compulsory, but I fail to see how they can force me to carry a smartphone. I am quite prepared to go to prison rather than be forced to have a smartphone, though I'm prepared to carry paper ID if required. It's obvious that absolutely no digital ID is safe, as we can see from Jaguar, Land Rover and many other cases.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's point well made. And also the storage of your biometric information. And as I say, I mean, for example, from next month, we're going to be required when entering the European Union to be fingerprinted.
Mm.
But that's a choice. That's not us living in our own country, going about our normal business. That's us traveling into someone else's territory and their country, their rules. But this is, you know, our country, our rules. But where is the discussion about this? There are benefits. You know, I mean, Estonia says that it saved 2% of its GDP in efficiency savings. But Estonia is a very different society. You know, it's a former Soviet state. The mindset tends to be a little bit different and are arguably more accepting of these things. Oh, by the way, in Estonia, they have a portal where you can access a database that shows who has accessed your data and when.
Oh, so that's a good idea.
It is a very good idea. I mean, you have to say that, you know, if security services were accessing, I'm sure they wouldn't appear on that list, but at least you'll be able to see if there's random access to it. And that's a very good idea, because then you can also see if someone has cloned your digital ID and is making hay with it.
Is it technically possible to have something similar but not on a smartphone that was just like a plastic card with a chip in it?
Well, yes. I mean, if you think about a passport, if you look on the back of a passport, you've got that little coiled chip, and that's something that doesn't have a battery in it. Mm. But when you beam a radio wave at it, it responds with the information that's stored on the chip. So it's got a little bit flat coiled antenna within it. You could do this. A system like this that is being proposed is technologically more advanced and more flexible. As I say, I think the whole thing is designed with mission creep or function creep in mind. It's clear that they want to do some really clever things with this. I guess I would say to you that I worry that when you introduce a technology like this, which is so powerful, that you have to think about not only what government you have today, but what sort of government you might have in the future.
Mm.
We've seen a shift towards authoritarianism in many countries where we wouldn't have necessarily predicted it. And what would Hitler have been able to do with technology like this?
Okay, you know? Yeah, absolutely. Ralph, thank you very much for your question. Mike's in Beverly. Hello, Mike.
Morning, Clyde, yeah.
Morning.
Just to pick up on that last point about future regimes, you can discount that completely. If we get an appalling regime comes into power, they will impose whatever they want, irrespective of what is in place at the time when they take power. If they want to put an ID scheme in place and however they want to use it, abuse it, they'll do it. So forget the argument that a bad regime may come into play, because they'll do what they want anyway.
A system like this will take many years to introduce and to iron out the bugs. If you introduce it now, the argument is that the danger would be that it's in place already and it's accumulated a lot of data already. It's not just the working software, it's the data and the information it holds. It's a much better thing. And if a country were, for example, to be even invaded, but it doesn't require an invasion. You put all this information in a honeypot and then you allow it to be stolen by an adversary. It's really, to me, it just seems like there are clearly benefits to a system like this: efficiency, money savings, convenience, all of those things. But it's always the case that you always have to balance convenience and efficiency on one side with security and privacy on the other. And that's a discussion that we can have as a society. I'm just a bit uncomfortable with it being introduced without any of that discussion.
Well, maybe there will be, of course. I mean, it could be that this is I think then they're not going to give you all the details. I'm sure they'll announce some kind of further stages and discussions and goodness knows what. I mean, it's not going to start tomorrow, I would have imagined. But it sounds like, Mike, you're not so sceptical about this.
No, I'm not too worried about it. And my second point is, can you play a little thought game with me for a second here, Clive? The people that are objecting to digital ID, just imagine that we didn't have a police force and that some bright spark came up with this idea that we have a police force. The same people would be saying, no, this is appalling. The thought that we've got a force that can arrest us. And if you see a crime taking place, they can pull us in, they can put us in a cell, they can think about this. Now, this is appalling. I can walk the streets, and if I have a crime against me, I'll go and sort it out for myself. The thought that we have a force that can actually impose things upon us. I mean, anyone with half a brain cell knows a police force is a good service. And the thought of an ID card that could protect us even further is obviously a better idea.
It's an interesting point you make there. Funnily enough, I've just been reading a book about which covers how the police gradually became a thing, and there was indeed, I think it was in the 1700s, there was indeed an attitude of, well, we can't have this. What? They're going to go around telling us what to do and stopping people and having the power. Up to that point, you just had, private individuals sort of effectively policing, and there was a lot of criticism, as I understand it. Mike, thank you very much. You want to comment on that, Fevzi?
I would just say that without a police force, citizens would feel the pain of crime very much more acutely than we feel the need for digital ID cards. I think that if you live in a society, of course you must accept some restrictions, otherwise there's no cohesion to society. The fact that we have laws, people have to follow laws, or at least if they don't, there should be consequences for that. But it's a question of where you draw the lines. How much of your personal freedom do you want to give up, and in exchange for what?
Steve's in Kingsbury. Hello, Steve.
Morning, Clive.
Morning.
Guest. How are you both?
Very good, thank you.
Good, thank you.
Well, your last comment reminds me of a famous quote. I think it's Benjamin Franklin a couple of hundred years ago who said, those who give up liberty for security get neither.
Yeah, and that's very...
And that seems kind of valid here.
I think you're spot on. And we've seen that time and time again, that governments, not just ours, introducing systems that are designed to have a particular effect, don't achieve that effect, but then adversely affect everyone else. So, for example, if you're introducing age verification systems, it has a tendency to push people towards unregulated sites, data on the dark web. And so criminals, if you're trying to trace communications, for example, criminals will go onto the secure system, and the rest of us will just have lost a bunch of our privacy for no reason. If the government, for example, were able to listen to every conversation that we have and every communication that we have, some people believe that that's already the case. So, I think Benjamin Franklin was ahead of his time with this. It's absolutely true. The possibilities of this system delivering what it's said to deliver, I think, are far from certain, and possibly less than 50%. It's more likely that there'll be circumventions of this system that, when they've been created, will allow far greater number of breaches than people producing false passports at the moment.
Thank you very much, Steve. On that point, Chris says, Clive, surely there would be an issue with AI creeping into this and with generated or cloned IDs? And
yeah,
there is the danger there, isn't there, as you were saying, that it wouldn't be impossible to replicate this, but fake ones.
No, what you'd need is essentially... you need...
Don't tell people how to do it, Fancy.
Well, I'll give you the principle. You'd have a layer of software that sat between the app and the scanner that maybe would change what's coming out of it or what's being transmitted on. And if you could work out how to do that, then yes, it's quite possible. And as I say, it scales very well because you don't have to physically do it again for every time. I think the idea with AI as well is not just how the system gets circumvented, but how AI algorithms will be used to spot patterns deep, hidden in this huge amount of data that's going to be generated by this system. It will allow it to draw inferences that a human detective could never draw because it's too far in there. And you'll be able to infer lots of information about the person, about you know, what they're doing, where they go, who they are, what they believe, how they vote, how to manipulate them in an electoral system. You know, AI systems can be used because it's this huge amount of data. It's extremely valuable. I would also like to know if we're going to receive any payment for sharing this information.
Sharing our data, yes.
Yeah.
Well, don't hold your breath on that one. We have Fevzi Turkalp with us from Gadget Detective, who is giving us the tech lowdown on the idea of digital ID and what's being called digital ID cards, although I don't think there's any card actually involved. We'll go back to calls in a moment. I just want to quickly mention some more of your messages first. And here's one from Helen, who says, I've recently had to stand outside shops to get a signal on my smartphone when trying to use it to pay for my shopping. In parts of the town, it doesn't work in car parks when I'm trying to buy a ticket using an app. I guess there will also have to be a printed ID card or similar to a driving licence, but maybe the technology will improve in the future. It's a fair point, isn't it? Would you need to have a signal for this to work, Fevzi?
Not clear to me that you would, because this will be effectively scanned or verified by another device, which could be connected in some other way. So if it's an office building, you could be using, you know, their Wi-Fi to do it. So it's not clear. It depends on exactly how they choose to implement this. You can conceive that there would be systems where you would require signal, but I suspect that they won't rely upon that because there are just far too many not spots in this country, and certainly inside certain buildings. Certain secure buildings have Faraday cages around them exactly for that reason anyway. So, I suspect that they'll do it in such a way that the device itself won't necessarily need a signal at that
time. Right. I noticed as well, just reading out that a few words about Nick Ferrari coming up later, that it referred to compulsory for all workers. Now, we don't actually know yet the full details of this, so it may not be that all adults. That's one report saying all adults, but on the other hand, if it was all workers or all people, that's slightly different, is it?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the briefings that have gone out have talked about UK, all UK adults.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
The other thing I
would query about what I just read out about Nick Ferrari is saying elderly citizens, yes, some elderly people are not tech savvy, but plenty are as well.
Well, yes, but if it's a mandatory system, everyone will need it.
Yeah.
So what is the provision for that? Because even if it's 1%.
Oh, of course, I just don't want to call all elderly people non-tech savvy.
No, absolutely not. No, it's a tricky one. But as far as I know, it's all UK adults, and I doubt very much they would go down the all workers line, because the government will slowly be becoming aware that AI is going to cause huge amounts of job displacement.
Hmm.
You could end up with quite a small subset of the population with jobs. So
yeah.
What's the point of that then? So I think it will be everybody who's an adult. I think you'll be expected to have one on your 16th or your 18th birthday, most likely.
Just in the interest of balance, we are getting a few comments in favour of this idea. Gerard, for example, in Uxbridge says the digital ID card is a great idea. You should have to show it at the doctor's, and if you require hospital treatment, it should also be a criminal offence if you don't have it with you when you're asked to show it.
Absolutely, and when you get your phone stolen, you should be required to show it when you're reporting the theft to the police.
Right. and one more here. Andrew says, having had personal experience of the pain of working with civil servants implementing technology projects, I can say that they've not got the skills to develop a joined-up digital ID system as is being described, but also laws will need to be changed to allow linking up of different data systems. As an example, we live in a country where one hospital ward can't access your data input by another ward in the same hospital, despite billions being spent a few years ago on an IT project to do exactly this.
Yeah, I mean, the government doesn't have a good track record, either for building the systems or even commissioning them correctly.
Yeah,
in the financial overrun. But it's not just that they go over budget and over time. They tend not to do what they're meant to do very well. And that's the problem. Look, they're obviously, 2%, if we could save 2% of GDP, that's huge. But if you're going to do it, you need to think about it very carefully, because there are clearly... legitimate concerns about it as well.
Absolutely. Delroy in Brixton. Hello, Delroy.
Morning, Clive. Morning, your guests are in.
Morning, Fevzi.
Morning, Fevzi.
Fevzi, good morning, Fevzi. Listen, I've got a really, really interesting question. I don't know if you've covered this already. Several members of my family are registered blind, Fevzi and Clive, and they will simply not be able to access this at all. And so will they be discriminated against, or will they be criminalising the blind?
There are lots of blind people that use smartphones. I know, because I've helped a number of people to, get to that position where they can use them. Both Android and Apple phones have assistive technologies. I mean, anyone can switch them on, but you can have things that will read to you what's on the screen, for example. There are various ways in which phones can be used. So I think that's not going to stop. A blind person will not be in a position where they can't use it. And bear in mind that it's going to be another person interrogating the phone as well. So, the person...
So you've got to put it on the phone, I suppose, in the first place.
It's got to be, it's got to be on the phone.
And that's a fiddly... I recently... There is a government thing where it you have to prove your identity. I don't know whether you've used it. It's a government app.
The one log on.
It's something like that, but it's on your smartphone. You have to download the app, and you have to. It has to read the chip in your passport, and then you have to. Then it reads your face, and you have to go through all of this. I mean, I found it extremely difficult to do as a sighted person.
Yeah, it is difficult, but I think that, especially with the development of AI, smartphones and other such technologies are becoming essential for people who are not sighted.
Yeah,
for example, AI, I mean, obviously smartphones have got cameras in them. AI systems now can describe what they're seeing in real time around them. So people can go shopping, hail cabs, and do all sorts of things that, if they're not sighted, are generally more difficult to do. So I think, if anything, people with visual impairments will actually have a higher degree of acceptance of smartphones than the rest of us, because it will become essential.
That's absolutely right. Delroy, thank you very much for that one. Gary in Maidenhead. Hello, Gary.
Yeah, hello, Clive.
Hi, how are you doing?
Not too bad, buddy, not too bad. I'll get straight to the point, because I know you're busy.
Go on.
Know my circumstances, so...
Yeah.
People like me that are homeless... and don't have a smartphone, does this mean that the government's got to supply you with finally cure homelessness by giving you an address, giving you a smartphone? And if not, does it mean that people like me that rely on benefits, if you haven't got an ID card, you won't get your benefits anymore? But crucially, what do they do about people like me that... Unfortunately, are in that situation of no smartphone and no home.
And no address. Homeless. Yeah. Well, I think you've sort of made the point, Gary. Do you want to comment on that, Fevzi?
Yeah, I mean, it's self-evident, absolutely right. I mean, the worry is that as the use of it increases, more and more scenarios, and it is not just the default method, but then the only method, that whole swathes of people, for various reasons, will be excluded from certain services, access to benefits or services like the NHS. It could be appalling, because eventually people will look at a piece of paper and not know what to do with it. With the best will in the world, computer will say no.
Mm.
And I think that before anything like this can be introduced, serious thought and money has to be given to dealing with the digital exclusion problem, which can be certain age groups, it can be disabled groups, it can be homeless people, it can be all sorts of people. We all assume that everyone has this technology, but not everyone does. And not everyone has the ability to afford a device and keep it charged and safe. People with cognitive dysfunction, how are they going to manage?
Michael in Leicester says, Clive, the idea in principle is good. However, it is the start of it will ultimately be when births are registered and when schooling starts. I would not want it to be like it is in China, where it's become a sinister Big Brother scenario. Well, yes, we're talking about adults at the moment, but you may well end up with an app when you're born. I wouldn't be at all surprised. Let's talk to John in Tooting. Hello, John.
All right.
Hello, John. What would you like to say?
Are we really going to trust the government to do the right thing with this? Because back in the Second World War, we fought against this Big Brother type thing they're trying to implicate here. And there's a matter of trust with the government. You know, they've brought in laws in via the back door, i.e. I can no longer vote because I haven't got a passport that shows who I am, who I am.
You mean voter ID?
And what happens to this,
last government.
Yeah, and what happens to this this thing if there's a power cut? Because in power cuts, when the internet goes down, you've got no phone service, you've got no nothing.
Well, from what Fevzi's, you seem to be saying you wouldn't necessarily need a signal, but obviously for the whole system to work, you need electricity, don't you?
Yes. Yes, that's true, but I mean, that's really true now. I mean, if you go into a hospital or any sort of office environment, you know, if their computers had no power, you couldn't really do much in the way of transacting your business there anyway. Look at the difficulty there has been in just trying to go over from the phone lines that we've got to some digital phone lines or more modern phone lines, not based on copper wire. And it's actually cost lives because, you know, you had this new whiz-bang technology, but suddenly they realised, oh, well, we need power. Because unlike a normal phone line, where a phone line carries a small amount of power enough to power a normal handset, a sort of tabletop handset, these new devices needed a power supply. So now they've had to go back and rethink it and start about batteries and, resilience for these systems. Mm. So I just think that these things need to be quite carefully thought through. But I think before that, there has to be a discussion about what are the benefits, what are the limitations, what are the legal safeguards that are going to be put in place along with this.
Hang on with us. Stay with us, Fevzi. I'd like to come back and also talk to you a little bit about what digital data is already being held and what we're already handing over and how safe that is. So we'll come back and talk about all of this in a moment on LBC. Quick one here from Suzanne, who says, Hi, Clive, listening to you from Australia. Interestingly, the Australian government has just announced the digital ID here today. Apparently, it will be fully functional by the end of this year. No consultation whatsoever, as per usual. Welcome to 1984, says Suzanne. Well, I didn't know that. That's an announcement in Australia as well. Fevzi Turkalp is with us. We are talking about digital ID. I just wanted to... One of the points that's been made, Fevzi, today is that we are, of course, already carrying around a lot of digital ID and we're giving a lot of our data already to lots of commercial companies.
Yeah.
Should we... I know that's not the same thing, but should we be equally concerned about that as we are, apparently, some people very up in arms about the state doing it?
I think we should be concerned. I think what's arguably unique is the universality of these proposals. So everyone will have to put data into one big pot, whereas not everyone has a, you know, an X account or a Facebook account or whatever. But the ability to link those together, and of course, when you think about, for example, meta services, you know, we've got Instagram and WhatsApp and Facebook, you know, those are essentially all the same product running off the same code base with different manifestations, you know, so you think of them as different services, but really they are one and they share that information. So already there are these large amounts of information. But one of the reasons, for example, why the government's been very keen on selling our health data is because, you know, our health data is quite unique in terms of its universality. It covers everyone has had interaction with the NHS. Whereas, for example, in America, where you know, private medicine is far more popular, the data is segmented into lots of different databases. So there is something to be said, you know, the data is more than the sum of its parts, and the ability to pull it together and analyze it, and as I say, with AI systems to do that, is an extra tier. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, whenever you download an app, you are agreeing to a bunch of permissions, okay? And some of them are often not relevant to what you're doing. So it's a game, but suddenly they want to access to your contact list. And when I say access, download and make a copy of your contact list, your location, facial recognition, speech. They can switch on the microphone. They can scan fingerprints. Mm. You know, all the metadata of who we talk to, where we go, and what. See, that information seems quite innocuous, but if you visit, for example, a certain hospital department every week, you know, it's not very difficult to infer what there might be something.
Is there a file somewhere, or is it lots of different files in different places that knows where I've been, what programs I've been watching, what I've bought, what food I like? But I mean, the amount of data they must have about us as individuals must be huge.
Well, we shed huge amounts of what they call metadata. So, for example, even if you can't listen to a telephone conversation, you know who is contacting who, at what time, for how long they spoke, and in what location they were. And you can build up a network of who knows who in a full framework of what connects groups of people.
Are there people keeping that data?
Yes.
Who's phoned who when?
Mobile phone companies keep that data.
Right.
And you know, this all started with a landmark case in the States some decades ago now about who owned the data that was shed. And what it was decided that the mobile phone company owned the data that we didn't. And I think that's the crux of everything. If we could have a legislative shift to say, the starting position is we own all our data, everything that we generate, everything that we shed by our movements, by our behaviours, is ours. It's us, free for us to sell or share if we want. But the problem is we're like kind of digital children. We weren't designed to grow up with this technology around us. And some apps act like shiny baubles that give you, you know, endorphin rushes. And we will share data without thinking about it and without necessarily understanding the possible consequences of that. Yeah. You know, and there are, you know, again, there are huge benefits to these technologies. I mentioned a moment ago how these assistive technologies allow people who have various disabilities to lead, you know, highly functional lives. That's a great thing, but so we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but it's if you create a system of rights and limitations on how that technology can and should be used, then you know, then we can have a conversation, I think.
Let's talk to Matt in Worcester. Hello, Matt.
Yeah, hello, Clive.
Hi. And
hello, Fedzi. I just want to say that I think you're one of the great guests that I hear at LBC. Very good. well, my question for you was that do you agree with me that a combination of the biometric visas that we currently have plus passports could already fulfill a lot of the government's stated aims regarding digital ID cards.
I do.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Do you?
I, I, Greg, but I do agree with you, and I think what I tried to allude to at the beginning is if you look at the stated purpose of these ID, we'll call them ID cards, these digital IDs, there is nothing that they are able to achieve that we're not already doing.
My second part of the question is then, if you do, which you do agree with me, that's, is it possible then that digital ID cards might really being pushed upon us to ultimately target benefits and tax avoidance, which I think can be the only, well, one of the possible conclusions, because like you say, they've already got passports, they've already got biometric visas, they can't really work in terms of deep state surveillance, but a digital ID card or a biological digital marker in years to come, that really could go for benefits and tax avoidance. Do you think that's a risk?
I think it's one of a range of uses a state can put this technology to. And I think, again, it is the mandatory nature and therefore the universality of it that is really powerful, because it makes, informal economies much more difficult. And we've seen pushes on all sides. I saw that HMRC was reintroducing its powers to dip into our bank accounts and take money out that it thinks it's owed. So I do think that there is a convergence of technologies that fundamentally shifts the balance of power away from citizenry towards the state, and then you means you must put an awful lot of trust in the state. Some people would say doesn't matter if they abuse it or not, that this is fundamentally wrong, this is a lack of freedom. Others will be worried about if the data is abused or stolen, but some people have a more fundamental objection. But the rise of these various technologies, the AI that goes along with them, will make systems that can allow states to control their populations almost completely.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on the show and talking about this, because I agree with your concerns.
All right, Matt, thank you very much for that. Just in the last couple of minutes, for those who are already concerned about all the data that they're handing over every day, every time they're on a phone, every time they're doing something digital, is there much that we can do to not take part in that? I mean, apart from just avoiding the devices completely, are there ways to just hold back your data and protect your privacy a bit more?
You can minimize it. You can't, unless you go completely off the grid, and even then. So it starts with what we choose to share, right? So in social media, but online generally. So do you share? I don't share personal photos, for example. I don't share pictures of my home. I don't share pictures of my car, anything like that. So we choose what to share. Mm. We recently had the situation where parents had posted pictures of their school children who were going back to school, and then found that Meta was using them for marketing purposes to middle-aged men. Mm. So it starts with what you share. Don't overshare, and don't be under the misapprehension that anything you share, even if your account is marked private and you think it's only going to friends and family, it's not. It's not, and you're signing or you're agreeing to agreements that actually allow Meta and other, not, I don't want to just focus on Meta, but companies generally can, I won't even say abuse, they can use that information in line with the agreement that no one's read or understood.
Yeah.
So there is that. There is also simple things like when you share certain information, like payment information, you're often given the option of allowing it to save that information. So next time you make a purchase, you don't have to enter your credit card data anymore. I would say try and minimize what you allow systems to share. So even if you've had to enter it once, go to the trouble and the inconvenience of entering your card information each time, and then it might not be on their system ready to be stolen.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. I also, I mean, and I have to be careful how I say this. I know of people who deliberately provide incorrect information on different forums to confuse any data aggregators. There are also services that actually go around and look for this sort of data aggregation. You get data brokers and have your data stripped out from it. And it's a running battle, because they keep doing it and you keep telling them to take it off. So some people don't bother and have given up. other people would just continue to fight. But there are services that do that. But I just think, you know, don't put anything online that you don't want the world to know. Switch off the location on your phone unless you actually need it at that time. Limit the apps that have access to location, camera and so forth. Have a spring clean of your mobile phone and get rid of any apps that you haven't used in the last year. The fewer apps you have, the more secure you are.
Fantastic advice as ever. Fevzi, thank you very much indeed. Fevzi Tokarp joining us there. You can catch him on the Gadget Detective podcast and gadgetdetective.com.